get swept by the Royals. They go down quietly, only one run in two games. Kansas City wasn't exactly lighting up the scoreboard themselves. They scratch three. They advance, take on the Yankees. Here to talk about that and look ahead at the AL and NLDS matchups from USA Today. Let's welcome back to the show Gabe Lax. Gabe, good morning. Welcome back to 105.7 The Fan. What is up?
I guess I should ask, how are you guys?
I'm all right. Yeah. You know, as a 59-year-old guy, this stuff doesn't get me all bent out of shape. Now, during the time it was happening in real time, I was yelling things I wouldn't be allowed to say on an FCC-regulated radio station. But, you know, you get time to reflect. I got my gas and electric bill, and everything got real again, if you know what I'm saying. Gabe Lax. But that being said, Kansas City, they come in. They had lost seven games twice in a month's time, going August in through September. We knew they were struggling offensively, which they did against the Orioles. But on a stun meter for you, Kansas City sweeping the Orioles rates where?
Oh, man. Right in the middle, about a 5 out of 10. And I know it's probably looks like more. You know, I mean, if you're feeling an 8 out of 10, I get that. But, you know, they kind of found this little groove here where they got built for the postseason a bit, really, down the stretch. You start, I guess, from the back when they acquired Lucas Ursig to sort of hold down the back end of the bullpen. You saw how great he was in game one. And then a really legitimate starting rotation where you had, you know, 3-4 guys make more than 30 starts, and Cole Reagans just pitched so well. And was able to, I mean, obviously suppress the Orioles bats, but, you know, also match Corbin Burns inning for inning. So it's, 2 out of 3 is just, it's enough to drive you crazy just because you're trying to analyze these things and, you know, fans are going to be upset and it's certainly understandable, but, you know, it's just such a sample you can't dig too deep into, and you can just kind of point to, well, they pitched the heck out of the ball and they had some really good situational hitting, and you know the Orioles were collectively terrible at the plate and going home, and that's you know, it's really kind of that simple. But no, they're a solid team, but certainly an upset when you look at just the personnel and the track record of a lot of these guys.
Now, Gabe, we look at the Orioles heading into the offseason. Mike Elias, Brandon Hyde meeting with the media today at 11:30 for Elias, 12 o'clock for Brandon Hyde. Back-to-back 90-win seasons. Hasn't been done in this city since 82-83. Back-to-back playoff appearances. Hasn't happened since 96-97. So the window's not closed. Banning stretch of the imagination. But if the Orioles want to get past their first round of playoffs, or maybe even win a game, whatever round it's going to be, what needs to happen this offseason for them?
Well, I think you have to start with what you're losing, and you're losing Corbin Burns. And so you think about how grim the second half was at times. 33-33 is not great. Not a disaster, but it's not great. But subtract Burns from that equation, and suddenly, you know, you think about how that might have gone, whether they even made the playoffs, you know, certainly don't win 91 games. So I think you kind of have to address that one way or another. It's not, you know, it's not an empty cupboard with the pitching staff. When you got Zach Eflin coming back, when you got Dean Kramer coming back, Cade Povich, Rogers, we'll see. And then, of course, Grayson Rodriguez. But at the same time, you know, injuries happen. We certainly found that out last year. So you can certainly pencil those guys in, you know, not put them in stone, but, you know, write them down in pen, but know that they're not going to be there for 33 starts, all of those guys. So, you know, do you dabble in the mid-range pitching market? Do you go big and try to get on the phone with Chicago and see about Garrett Crochet? I think they need to do something like that because you saw how well it worked out with Burns. You see that there's no real impact starting pitching necessarily on the way, and you see that this window with these guys is still wide open. You know, last 2 days notwithstanding, they need to be supported by a really good pitching staff, and you know, the AL East is not getting any easier. The American League is not getting any easier. You know, you're going to run into these guys next year. You know, Seattle, everybody else, they all, you know, coming back pretty well stocked. So as much as, you know, you want to kind of gnash your teeth over the hitting right now, I think they, they do need to backfill with some starting pitching to make sure that you know that can still be viable over 162 games.
Gabe Lax, USA Today, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, talking baseball playoffs in particular. All right, let's move away from the Orioles. Detroit, Houston, Astros for the first time since, 2016, will not be in the ALCS as they go away quietly. Josh Hader gives up the double to Ibanez. Hader, by the way, from Millersville, right down the road here in Baltimore. But Detroit, hey, look, they were terrible. First half of the season, Scooble's name prominent in the trade discussions at the deadline. Orioles were linked. Come to find out, Detroit, I guess, wasn't really serious about moving them. But now they've been red hot. They get through Houston. They have Cleveland coming up next. The surprise meter for Detroit being in the playoffs, going through the Astros, and the anticipation for them maybe pulling the upset against the Guardians here.
Yeah, I actually had them to pull the upset because of Scooble, largely, almost entirely because of him. But, we saw them in Baltimore just a couple weeks ago. And for Orioles fans, you watch them pretty attentively. 6 out of 9 games in that stretch here in late September. Again, just there's no lab to necessarily concoct this, but just really well constructed for the playoffs right now. Starting with Scooble, you throw that guy in game one. Sometimes you have the greatest pitcher in the game, and it doesn't matter. You think, the Aces are going to win, but then sometimes he's like a lead blocker you can follow all the way through October. And right now, that's the way it looks up. If they are to get by the Guardians, in the next round, you got Scooble in Game 3. He probably should be well aligned for an ALCS Game 1 if they get there. So it's really working out for them. But the way A.J. Hinch was pushing those buttons down the stretch with regard to the really weird pitching that, that they do with the various openers. I don't think anybody had Tyler Holton on their dance card as a game two impact playoff starter, but he does the opener thing. They really got a little too cute yesterday and threw Jackson Jobin in a really high leverage situation. And then, these teams are a little obsessed with like, hey, we're going to unleash our top prospect in October, and sometimes it's great, and other times he gets one out, gives up 2 runs, puts them in jeopardy. But the way they rallied back to take down Houston and a really tough series, I thought, for manager Joe Espada with the Astros. Your first time through in the postseason is not easy, and he made a couple of decisions that kind of backfired, and it kind of got away from them real quick. But it's remarkable what the Tigers have been doing, and it's a little scary to think what they can continue to do as long as all those guys that A.J. Hinch turns to keep coming up gold every single time.
Hey, Gabe, who do you think the Phillies want tonight, the Brewers or the Mets?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. Probably the Brewers. The Mets have been driving me crazy all year just because it's like, do you buy into what they're doing? Do you think they're for real? This is pretty cute, but come on. Is Jose Iglesias, swimming in the fountain of youth? But, they're a live dog, man, and it's a little daunting. And, it's kind of like, a Ravens-Steelers playoff game. Do you really want to face your divisional rival? The Mets have come into Citizens Bank Park how many times? They either split or took 3 or 4 a couple weeks ago to really, to really galvanize their playoff hopes. So that's going to be no big deal to the Mets. The Brewers, you got Freddie Peralta, but he got rocked pretty good in Game 1. He won't be available for a Game 3. They're forced to go to a Game 3. I think the Brewers would be relatively decimated coming in. As long as don't pitch to Jackson Churio, man. Just learn your lesson, work around that. But, I would say they're very quietly rooting for the Brewers up there in Philly.
Gabe Lax, USA Today. Real quick, Gabe, before we let you roll, L.A., San Diego, who you like?
I like the Padres. They held back Dylan Cease, and it paid off. And, again, the great mystery, Shohei Ohtani in the playoffs, it's going to be incredible to watch. But, I like the Padres. I like their bullpen. I like the lineup 1-7. I think they drive the Dodgers crazy one more time.
Gabe Lax, USA Today. Gabe, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the DSs. We'll talk to you before the championship series, I'm sure.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
There's Gabe Lax, everybody. We'll come back, whip around. talk about some things happening in the world of sports currently and historically in one of the great games. We sit here and lament what happened yesterday, Oriole Park at Camden Yards, 10 years ago today, one of the great moments of Camden Yards, maybe the greatest outside of Cal breaking Lou Gehrig's streak. Took place then 11:30. Mike Bordick, Oriole Hall of Famer. Oriole season is over. What needs to happen for them, according to Mike Bordick, to take the next step? That's like winning a playoff game. Then we'll get into the series after that.
Vinny and Hades with
brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
105.7 The Fan.
All right, time for the whip around here on this Total Request Thursday. Pick a song, we'll play it. Send your request possible. Text line at 410-583-1057. Get your votes in for Featured Artist Friday. Same number. Brandon Hine going to meet with the Meteor, 12 o'clock. Mike Elias doing it in about 9 minutes. So we'll have some of that for you, hopefully, in our final hour or so. But it's the whip, and we'll have Keith Kavanaugh on tomorrow. Talk about what's happening in College Park. From TerrapinTimes.com. Maryland football off this week, coming off the loss at Indiana last Saturday, 42-28. Maryland 3-2 on the year, 0-2 in the Big Ten. Northwestern comes to town. Northwestern hosts Indiana, by the way, Saturday, and Indiana's 14.5-point favorites. Hoosiers looking to go to 6-0 for the first time in like a bazillion years.
They got a good team, and they're extremely well coached. Yeah, it'll be interesting to follow. Them. They're kind of what we were hoping the Terps would be.
Yeah, Cignetti's got them. They hadn't turned the ball over all season long. Did it four times against Maryland. Unfortunately, the Terps could not turn any of it into points.
Yeah, and they've done a nice job in the portal, too. He brought all his James Madison guys with him.
James Madison's still cooking, by the way.
Oh,
minus Cignetti.
Oh, yeah, they scored 70 on Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina scored 50 and lost by 20. That's a bad day. Bad day at the office for the defense there. Maryland basketball, however, men. Verbal commitment from 6'3 combo guard Christian Jeffrey out of Mount Zion Prep in Lanham or Laurel. I think it's Laurel or Lanham. One of them down there in PG County, I think it is. But he's from Brooklyn, New York. Moved down to Maryland a couple years ago. He was teammates in high school with Malachi Palmer, who's expected to be a freshman standout for Kevin Willard. This year's Maryland team, four-star recruit, joins Marcus Jackson as two top 100 guys, four stars for the class of 2025. So Christian Jeffrey commits to Maryland yesterday, and Keith Kavanaugh teased that last week, and he'll give us more of a scouting report tomorrow here on 105.7 The Fan. There is a Thursday night football extravaganza. And you can hear that game on 105.7 The Fan. Atlanta hosts Tampa. And we'll do our picks later in the show as we get you ready for week 5 of the NFL season. Atlanta, 2-point favorites in this game. Tampa's 3-1. Baker Mayfield's been playing a great football.
Yep.
They had that bump in the road against Denver. And they bounced back last week, blow out Philly. New Orleans wins on a coup field goal at the buzzer to beat the Saints. So, I don't know. Atlanta's 2 points. We'll do our picks again, as we said. But, you know, tease it a little bit. I'm leaning in Tampa's favor as we sit here at 11:24 on a Thursday morning.
Cousins hadn't really cranked it up yet. And maybe he can't. I don't know. But
where's all this Bijan Robinson nonsense everybody keeps talking about from a fantasy perspective?
Yeah, I mean, Bob, they need to get the ball in that dude's hands is what they need to do, because he's amazing.
Kyle Pitts, fourth pick in the draft. I don't know if we ever see that level of production, right?
No, I don't. I tend to agree with you on that one.
Mike Harmon, talk fantasy and real football with him around 1:30. It's the whip around Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. This day in sports history, mainly Baltimore related, but elsewhere. It's October the 3rd, 1990. George Brett won the batting title for the Kansas City Royals. Became the first player in baseball history to win a batting title in three different decades. Did it in 1976, 1980, and then again in 1990. George Brett, Hall of Famer. So congratulations to him on that accomplishment. This day in Ravens history, how about 2010 at Pittsburgh? Nolan, you'll remember this. I kind of sort of do. Joe Flacco hit T.J. Husmanzada with a TD pass with 32 seconds left to beat the Steelers 17-14. Remember that?
I do. I remember the
Steeler. He was a Bengal.
Bengal. Yep. But the look on the Steelers fans' faces there, right in the end zone section as he caught that ball, stood right in front of them. Great. Great picture.
Yep. 14 years ago today, unfortunately, when the two teams would rematch in Pittsburgh in the playoffs. Well, we'll save that for the appropriate date. How about 1979 Orioles history, game one, American League Championship Series. Orioles taking on the then California Angels. John Lowenstein hit a three-run over down the line. As the Orioles stun the Angels, John Montague serves it up. Lowenstein coming in. Earl Weaver meets him at third base. It was crazy. Yeah, I remember it. Up 14 at the time. We talk about the disappointment of yesterday. That was one of the great moments in Orioles history. Starting pitchers, by the way, for that game one at Memorial Stadium. Jim Palmer for the Orioles. Nolan Ryan, which would be his last game as an Angel because he'd signed with the Astros as a free agent in the offseason. A lot of Hall of Fame. But Rod Carew, Eddie Murray, some Hall of Fame action going on. And that thing, Orioles would eventually win that one in four games when they were best of fives, the championship series. And then 10 years ago today, as we envision Gunnar striking out to end the game yesterday, how about 10 years ago today? Maybe the outside of Cal breaking Lou Gehrig's record. Nolan, I'll let you answer this when we play this highlight.
Swings!
Years ago today, Oriole Park, Camden Yards, Delman Young, bases clearing double off Joakim Soria as the Orioles stunned the Detroit Tigers 7-6. Nick Markakis went deep earlier in that game. Brad Brock gets the win in relief. Kevin Gausman was huge in that game because Wei-Yin Chen got rocked. Gausman came in, stemmed the tide, allowed the Orioles to get back in it. Brock got the win. Zach Britton got the save. 7-6 final score. Orioles were underdogs in that series and swept the Tigers, who's three pitchers that series. Verlander, Scherzer, David Price.
Three-headed monster.
Yep, and the Orioles swept them. And Nelson Cruz would hit the home run to win the game three. Down the line off Price, that would be the last game postseason the Orioles have won.
Right, as great as the moment is, and it still is, I mean, the best.
Best outside of Cal? Best in Camden Yards history?
I would think so.
I'm trying to think of one that's better.
Yeah, to find something else. And certainly in the current or my lifetime postseason success, that's the moment. But it stings even more hearing that a day after we just witnessed what we witnessed with this team. That, not to disparage Delman Young, but I'm sick of hearing this highlight. I want a new highlight. I don't want to have to another year of having to watch the Delman double again and again.
They're like 30 years from now. And here's what happened in Orioles Park, Camden Yards. Anyway, but it's still glorious, and it was 10 years ago today, which is kind of mind-boggling. In and of itself, we'll come back. Mike Bordick, Oriole Hall of Famer, a colleague, Baltimore Baseball Tonight, put a bow on the Orioles season with him. Now look ahead to the offseason, so stay tuned. Funhouse trip coming up 11:45. Then it's news from the Nest. Going to hear from John Harbaugh. Going to hear from Lamar Jackson. Ravens getting at it division style, going to Cincinnati. Maybe shutting the window on the Bengals. Total Request Thursday, by the way. Triumph, get your votes in. Featured Artist Friday. Enough dilly-dallying. Let's bring in an Oriole Hall of Famer, our colleague from Baltimore Baseball Tonight, brought to you by Salvo Auto Parts, which sadly has now come to an end. He's Mike Bordick. Bordy, what's up?
Hey, Bob. How's it going, man?
It's going all right. And, you know, I'm sure you were like me and a lot of Oriole fans, frustrated English voice, watching what was going on there for two games against the Royals. Yeah. The bases loaded, nobody out. The pop-up, I said it earlier, when Santander popped up, I looked at my daughter and said, we're done. And I was wearing my Oriole hat. I said, we're done. And they were, basically. But a season-long, especially second-half magnified, problemo with them, inability to hit with runners in scoring position. What happened? And last year, they were the number one team in baseball in that area. This year, one of the worst. What changes philosophically to make that a strength into a weakness all of a sudden?
Oh, wow. You know, it's really hard to, I guess, put a finger on that. I think one of my concerns, and I worry about, especially with a really young team, is, you know, just so many voices trying to figure out, you know, how to get out of slumps, how not to go into slumps, what to work on. And guys are just having a hard time. They were grinding the whole second half, struggling, and could not find any consistency really all the way through. I mean, Gunnar stayed pretty consistent, but, you know, some of the key bats just disappeared for this team offensively, and they just couldn't recover. And I don't know exactly if you just put blame on who to put blame on. You know what I mean? I mean, you got to obviously hold the players responsible. I think some of the young guys, maybe too early, Jackson Holiday, Mayo, for sure, they come to mind, the struggles that they had. But O'Hearn really scuffled the second half. Santander never hit for average, right? But his power was always there. Just guys so inconsistent. And I think the first half, especially the first couple months, man, everybody was clicking. Like 1 through 9 was enjoying some success. Adley was swinging the bat well. We were all saying, oh my gosh, we've got like 2 or 3 potential MVPs on this team. Next thing you know, Westberg's a huge contributor and maybe one of the key cogs in the offense. So I'll make a couple excuses. Him getting hurt was a huge setback. Adley losing his swing was a huge setback because I think so many players look up to him, and when he's scuffling, I think everybody just kind of follows suit. You know what I mean? Because that's how impactful I think he was on this organization. And when he went down, it just seemed like the whole offense really struggled to find themselves and never really did. We were all hopeful there that last week, right, when everybody got healthy again, and we were really all in on that. Their health is going to be their wealth, and they still couldn't overcome, I guess, just the quality of the pitching, the inability to make adjustments, and the inability to come up with the big hit in multiple opportunities.
Now, Bordy, we're going to have all offseason to address these things, but we have limited time here on a Total Request Thursday. Corbin Burns, assumption has been he's gone. So Scott Boras did not have a great offseason getting his free agent signed. I mean, even the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks said signing Montgomery was one of the worst things I've ever done in the history of mankind, even though Montgomery had fired Boras, whatever it is, paraphrasing a little bit. Do the Orioles at least make a fair, should they, at least make a fair effort to keep him around? Because by all accounts, he really did like playing for the Orioles.
Well, absolutely. And I kind of think they're in a favorable position there. He had one of his best years ever. He was going to be the Cy Young Award winner again had he not stumbled in the month of August. But he regrouped and became pitcher of the month. I mean, he was a Cy Young type pitcher pretty much all season long. And the Orioles have not seen an ace like that in a long time, since maybe Mussina. So, I mean, it goes back there. So, this is the deal. You got to, at some point, pay. And you better get something really good. And we have seen really good. If you want to have a chance next year, you've got to have a frontline arm like this. Do we hope Kyle Bradish turns into the Cy Young again? There are no guarantees on any of these Tommy John surgeries. There are no guarantees at all how they're going to come back. We saw that with John Means. Tommy John, he's coming back. Oh, my gosh, Tommy John again. Are you kidding me? So there are no guarantees with these guys. You got to get what you can. I think Corbin Burns likes it here. He looks very comfortable here. I think there's a great opportunity to sign him. Also because of the fear of the free agency. How can those guys not be signed to multi-year deals? Snell and Montgomery. I mean, they both get one-year deals, and now they got to go prove themselves again. Corbin Burns can get locked up. I think there's a great opportunity, and the Orioles got to take a great shot at that.
Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick joining us here. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Our colleague on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, which sadly has come to an end for the 2024 season. Assess the job Brandon Hyde did in 2024, because as you would imagine, Mike, a lot of people want him to be the ex-manager of the Orioles today.
Yeah, I think it's really hard as the game has evolved, right? So has the big league managers, the life of a big league manager, and how they, I think, approach the game. Now, I'm not going to directly compare Brandon Hyde to Kevin Cash, but in my opinion, Kevin Cash was the first truly run manager by analytics. Every move he made was because an algorithm told him, this is the higher percentage, do that. We witnessed it in the World Series with one of the greatest pitching performances ever, and the whole world was shocked when Kevin Cash went out and took Blake Snell out of a World Series game when he was dominating the best offense in all of baseball. And that's what he did. Now, Kevin Cash is great at dealing with players, getting the most out of them and having them buy into this new system. And it seems like they have success because of it. They have sustainable success, and they give guys opportunities. Now, you know, that being said, that is kind of where Brandon Hyde is, I feel. I think he's a really good baseball guy. I think he's there to keep young guys focused and in line and develop at the major league level. And I think there are a lot of things that are run by the Orioles that are analytic. Now, I could be completely off base right there, but I think the bulk of his decision-making is pretty much right by the analytic book.
Now, Morty, Jim Palmer was saying this morning on the morning show that he wished that, you know, because they were asking him about the batting, the hitting and stuff, and he says, well, you know, Terry Crowley has coached some of the best hitters of all time, and they didn't even talk to him, and they should have guys like him around at least to go ask him questions, along with a guy like Mike Bordick, who didn't have an error in over 100 games, and we've had a shortstop with 24 errors.
Well, I agree, I guess, in a sense, because I only think experience bodes well for any player that plays at the major league level. And I know and accept the fact the terminology and the game of itself has changed, right? It's a different ball game, but forever the game's been based on numbers. And I think, how do you get the most out of players? It's not by giving them a number. It's by encouraging them to persevere and build determination and try to get the most out of everything their body can give to be the best baseball athlete they can be. So there are a lot more things that come into that. And some of it is just the experiences players have had through the course of their incredible careers. Terry Crowley played with the greatest hitter of all time, Pete Rose. You don't think he learned something from that approach that he couldn't give to another player? He worked with David Ortiz, one of the greatest clutch performers in MLB history. He was his batting coach with the Twins. I had great success with him. Listen, like I said, numbers are great. In the heat of the battle, simplifying the game at any level becomes paramount. And I think sometimes it's hard to bring that back when there are so many numbers and voices going on.
Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick. At least Crowley didn't let his feelings be known at that Hall of Fame induction. Hey, he's Mike Bordick, Oriole Hall of Famer, just like Terry Crowley. Terry Crowley, by the way, huge in the 79 World Series. We can go forever. Bordy, appreciate the time. Next week, we'll talk about the playoffs and what you think about what's going on there. And we'll hear what Hyde and Elias had to say today and get your impressions on that as well. Wish we were down in Pickles today. We're not, but we'll talk soon.
Me too. All right, I might go back down there anyway.
Just stand there.
All right, I'll see you.
I think we still owe him money, but don't let him know anything. Here's Mike Bordick, everybody. Right. Oriole Hall of Famer. We'll come back. Funhouse, Nolan McGraw. Then we got news from the desk coming up top of the hour. We're going to hear from John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson. We're going to count some late-week dough, hopefully at 12:15 with buy or sell. And then Brian Wacker, the Baltimore Sun, talking about the Ravens going to Cincinnati. Bengals are struggling coming off their first win, but when we get to their film in the 12 o'clock hour, boy, they do a lot of things defensively that the Ravens could possibly expose offensively. Against the scuffling Bengals coming off their first win, we'll have a film breakdown of Cincinnati, by the way, coming up around 12:45, and then later on in the 1 o'clock hour as well, so stay tuned for that. But news from the Nets, pardon me, coming up next. Let's bring Nolan in. Quick draw. Hey, Phil. Have you calmed down any over the last 2 hours? Oh, my God.
A little bit. Again, last night's one of those nights where you almost wish, man, we wish I was going live
even
right now.
Even your voice was like, oh, you were like, you're wavering in your voice. I was like, oh, my God.
Well, I was yelling and screaming at Seth Lugo for drilling Jordan Westberg early in that game. Maybe said some things that I regret, but that's neither here nor there. I'll tell you what did happen after the game. And any real Baltimore sports fan has had this experience after a crushing Ravens defeat or a crushing Orioles loss. You're riding the light rail home. You're packed in like sardines. Everyone's depressed. Everyone's commiserating about what we just watched, talking about the offseason, the moves, and all that. But I did want to give a shout-out. I ran into a listener. I was talking to Matt on the train. Great guy. We were sharing our woes of Orioles baseball, and He informed me that he listens to the show, so shout out to Matt.
Oh, there you go. Right. And how did the conversation get initiated? How did he know that you were Nolan McGraw?
Well, no, we were just talking baseball, and then he made an offhanded comment, said, hey, sports talk radio is going to be fun tomorrow. And I said, well, you're telling me that's my job. And then we went from there.
Oh, so. There you go.
But shout out, Matt. Good guy.
Well, Matt, thanks, man. Thanks for listening. And sorry couldn't get a W for you, man, at Orient Park. No, I'm like, we don't play. I mean, we're just watching the game like everybody else. We got time to go to Funhouse or what?
Let's see. Well, we do have some calls on it. We might as well do the calls.
Let's do the
calls.
They've
been waiting a long time.
All right, they're waiting a long time. Where are we starting? Let's go to Trippy. How about we get Trippy in here? Trippy, what's up?
Golly, man.
Sorry about that, dude. Yeah. Saw you yesterday. Good to stop by.
I ain't never been on hold this long. An hour and 17 minutes, but it's all look. It's all good, though, man. Hey, I was on my way to Pickles, but I forgot. Dang, we got swept. Ain't that crazy?
Well, you hurry up because you'll meet Mike Bordick. I think he's going down, too.
Yeah, but look, man, I told Nolan yesterday, man, I said, look, as long as we can get some runs, we'll be good. And I'll be damned. I think we had a better chance of winning the game yesterday than week one. I mean, game one, because we had bases loaded. And we had bases loaded. I was talking to Rob, too, because we all was together. I told Rob, man, we can get Cedric Mullins on base. We might be good. Boom, smack the home run. Walk, bases loaded. And I'm like, we about to get some runs. And it's like the same old, I don't even know. But I just want to let Oreo fans know right now, I said this on the Big Mad Morning Show. I'm going to say it again. I'm not really upset with, like, Brandon Hyde. Like, what fans wanted him to do? Like, can Brandon Hyde pitch hit for us? Like, I don't understand. Like, what's going on? Like, the bats ain't show up, man. So hopefully the front office do something. I'm going to be real with you. I don't think Santander coming back. I think he going out for the money. So, and I don't blame him. But I think he going to go to, like, a real contender. I'd be mad if he goes to the Yankees, though. Imagine him going to the Yankees, Bob.
I wouldn't be happy with it. Like when Mike Mussina signed with New York, I was kind of mad at him for a minute. Not that Mike Mussina gives a crap what I think, but I was working with his brother at the time, Mark Mussina, and let him know how frustrated I was.
Right.
What I saw, was reading on the interweb, and Tom Lavero wrote this, that apparently the Nats are going to make a run at old Tony Taters, the Washington Nationals. So maybe he just rolls right down.
I don't see nothing wrong with that. But like I said, he had a good season with us, though, man. I just hope. I'm going to be honest with you, though, right? Because the Orioles, you know, like our superstars, like the future, they still young. I just hope, like, this a learning experience. Because, I mean, 10 straight losses, like, come on.
Yeah, they went quite Trippy, thanks for holding, dude. I appreciate that. And Trippy did pop down at Pickles, always loyal to the end. And I'm sure we'll be seeing. Hey, by the way, and Rashawn was texting me. All right, the Orioles are done. We're still going to be at the Horseshoe Casino for the Ravens.
Yep.
Not like we go into hibernation for the next 6 months. Our party's just getting started. And Maryland basketball's been going to be coming up soon. You talk about the sleeping giant. And we'll get into all of that in due time. Another call. Nolan McGraw. Let's go to Chicago. Get Steve. Steve, what's up?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hello, Steve.
Yeah, I was just calling in. I mean, I don't know what's going on with baseball today, but years ago, if you struck out three times, the coach would sit you on the bench, right? But now it's like these guys have no shame in striking out. Whatever happened to choking up on the bat when you got two strikes, especially if the bases are loaded and you just need to put a ball in play? Do you know how many more times the Orioles would have scored runs this year if they just put a ball in play with the bases loaded?
Or just trying to go the other way. You know what I mean? You don't have to pull everything, and thanks, Steve, for holding. You don't have to pull everything. You don't have to hit everything 500 feet. But let's put this in perspective, too, where philosophies have changed. Luis Arraez just won his third straight batting title with three different teams, and most people don't even know who he is. But he's played in the playoffs right now, and he's going to be taking on the Dodgers. But he doesn't hit 500-foot home runs. He just gets on base, and he's DH because he wasn't that great of a fielder. But winning batting titles, we just talked about with George Brett, that used to be a thing. And I was like, I bet, quite frankly, I couldn't tell you who won it 3 years ago in the American or National League. Batting titles?
No.
It used to be a big deal because a lot of these dudes who won batting titles were just kind of, Rod Carew's got seven of them.
Right.
I don't think he ever hit 20 home runs in a season.
No.
He had 15 or so before, but changes the game. Strikeouts used to be frowned upon. Now it's, all right, well, you can go 0 for 3, but if you hit a home run and you're fourth at bat and drive in a couple, we'll take that versus the Ks and not protecting the plate. Strikeouts are outs.
Yeah.
At least if you, I mean, you saw it with when the Orioles loaded the bases. Westberg hit the little tapper in front and Lugo misplayed it. You strike out, he's walking back to the dugout, staring at the grass on his way back. Oh, my God. All right, let's talk about the Ravens. It's a more positive subject because they won two in a row, unless people are complaining they don't throw the ball enough. And why would you be doing that when you've handled your business and your quarterback's QB rating's been over 130 in back-to-back games? But news from the desk coming up next. Let's count that dough, hopefully at 12:15. And we'll preview the Bengals game with Brian Wacker from the Baltimore Sun. Cincinnati's 1-3, but are they ready to explode? We'll talk about Brian. Talk about that with Brian. Then Vinny's film breakdown of the Bengals. Are they a team ready to explode, or is it a team getting ready to get exposed?